oven mitts should be easy to reach when you're cooking. Avoid wearing loose clothing and never hold small children while cooking. Although kitchen fires may seem small, never forget how dangerous and devastating a fire can be. When in doubt, get out and call 911 for help. For more information, call your local fire department or go to www.c2fr.org.
Open calendar. What's my schedule looking like?
Next Thursday, you will be caught in an emergency flash flood between Park and First Street.
What? No, that doesn't work. I'm busy then. Decline. Decline.
Floods don't exactly work around your schedule. Disasters don't plan ahead. But you can. It starts with talking to your loved ones about making an emergency plan. So don't wait. Communicate. Visit mass.gov/MEMA. Brought to you by the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the Big Picture. Terry Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the emergency only telephone number. If there is an actual radio emergency where you need to reach me, please call. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to sort this out. I've set myself a deadline for sorting this out. And 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, the week after the Halloween show, I will have an answer to how you can interact with me while I'm on the air without me having to answer the phone and interrupt the show and do all the things. Because for those of you who don't know, those of you who've never called into a radio station before, I can't just pick up the phone and throw people on the air. We are not allowed to do that. That is, in fact, an FCC violation. So if you call into the station and you have a comment, I have to ask you, would you like to be on the air? And if you say no, I have to respect that. So because it's just me pressing all of the buttons and doing all of the things and doing all of the talking and logging everything and everything that goes on, it would be great if it was just me sitting here answering a talking into a microphone and pressing a button every now and again. But that's absolutely not what goes on. You have to be really good at multitasking to do radio. And for those of you who've been listening to the show for a long time, you know that I'm really bad at multitasking. You know that at some point there is either going to be dead air or a missed cue or some weirdness that creeps into the show, because after nearly 15 years, I still can't figure out how to press all these buttons the right way. This is why I need a producer. You know, I really do need a producer. That would be a nice thing to have. But anyway, we got some severe weather moving into the area tonight, so stay home. You know, this is a good night to shelter in place, as it were. Cuddle up in a Snuggie or a nice warm blanket. Get yourself some cocoa and settle in for the rest of the night. You've got me until 9 o'clock on The Town with Mikey D. Great local music coming your way at 9 o'clock tonight until midnight. And then you can go to bed and sleep through the storm. And we'll get you caught up on that in just a moment. But in the meantime, some local news. Fall River's long nightmare is over. It has come to an end. From CBS Boston, Fall River Mayor Haziel Correa announces leave of absence. I am impressed. I am impressed that he actually is taking a leave. Notice he's not resigning. By the way, he's taking a leave of absence, but I think he did take his name off the ballot down there in Fall River. Again, from CBS Boston, embattled. That's, what was it, the three adjectives that you never want to see next to your name, right? The three adjectives you never want to see next to your name. One of them was suspected, right? Suspected means we think you've done the bad thing. And we're a little unhappy with you. Then there is controversial. Controversial is you've done a bad thing and we definitely don't like you. Embattled is the one that comes after suspected. And then it usually goes embattled, or usually goes suspected, embattled, disgraced. So that's one of the three adjectives that you never want to see next to your name. Suspected is the first bad one. By the time you get to embattled, embattled means that they've found something and you are in hot water and you are well on your way to becoming disgraced. Anyway, embattled Fall River Mayor Haziel Correa announced Tuesday he will be taking a leave of absence and he will suspend his reelection campaign. Has not taken his name off the ballot, as far as I know. He has suspended his reelection campaign, but, you know, if the good people of Fall River decide to vote him back into office, he'll think about it. You know, maybe he'll come back. The president of city council will take over mayoral duties, but Correa will retain his title as mayor and his $119,000 salary through the end of his term in January. Because really, who walks away from the money? Isn't that the first rule in politics? Don't walk away from the money. So he's not doing the work anymore. He's essentially, he hasn't resigned. The honorable thing would be to resign and say, I'm not taking the money. I'm leaving. I'm off the ballot. Goodbye. Done. No. He's taking a sabbatical. He's taking a leave of absence. That way the money keeps flowing, right? Quote, today's announcement provides the city of Fall River an opportunity to build on the success and accomplishments of my administration without any distraction, Correa said. This announcement allows the voters who will take to the polls the chance to evaluate candidates on policy and platforms, not headlines. The 27-year-old mayor spent much of the speech explaining how his administration helped Fall River's economy and gave the city financial stability. Correa has been indicted twice in the last year and is facing 24 federal counts of extortion. This is why he needs $119,000, because the lawyers don't come cheap. You spend a lot of money to get those lawyers. In October 2018, he was arrested for allegedly stealing investors' money meant for an app he developed called Snow Owl. Last month, the U.S. attorney indicted Correa again, this time saying the mayor extorted hundreds of thousands of dollars from would-be marijuana retailers trying to set up businesses in Fall River. As critics sought to remove him from office, the mayor fought for months to keep his job. Just last week, the court sided with Correa when a judge denied the city council's vote to remove him from office. After Correa's first arrest, Governor Charlie Baker said he thought the mayor should, quote, step aside, end quote, until the case was resolved. Correa continued to work, even campaigning, so when he was recalled, he was reelected by voters on the same night. You may remember that one from back in the spring. The voters voted to recall Haziel Correa, and then in a three-way race for mayor, he got the most votes and won the office back. Fall River, ladies and gentlemen, Fall River. Following the latest allegations, the city council had voted in favor of appointing council president Cliff Ponte to temporarily replace Haziel Correa as acting mayor. A judge ruled the city charter allows the council to remove a mayor who has been convicted of a felony, but not a mayor who has only been charged with one. Guess what the Fall River City Council is going to be taking up in the very near future? You might want to fix that loophole. Quote, I fully expect to lead this city on the rise once again in the future, Correa concluded. Well, you know, 15 to 20 from now, Haziel, I'm sure the city of Fall River will still be there. Correa did not mention any of the charges against him and has previously denied them. Quote, it's a relief for everybody, I think, at this point, that the distraction of having him in office will continue to have a black eye on this community, which doesn't deserve that, said Ponte. Paul Coogan, Correa's main political rival, said, quote, I think you have to worry about Haziel Correa until January 1st. We have to work to make sure we are the alternative come November 5th. So, Fall River's nightmare, they're still paying the guy. I mean, this is what I love. You know, the honorable thing to do in this situation is to resign. Haziel Correa did not resign. He's taking a leave of absence. He's not going to do the job. He's not going to show up for work, but he's keeping his $119,000 a year. Hey, who among us in that situation wouldn't do the same thing? Oh, yeah, the decent people are the ones who wouldn't do that. So as to why he's stepping down now, the only thing that I can think of is that some or other shoe is going to drop between now and Election Day. And Correa knows it. They've either got some hard evidence against him, or he's been talking to his lawyers, and the lawyers are saying, you're not going to beat the rap on this. You're going to jail. For whatever reason, he's stepping away, and he hopes that he can represent Fall River again in the future. You know what? I kind of do, too, because this is hilarious. Right? It is. And people talk about corruption in government, right? What is this if it is not corruption in government? The guy is indicted for shaking down dispensary owners. People want to open up pot dispensaries in Korea. You had to pay the guy if you wanted to be considered. That is corruption, plain and simple. Now, it's alleged at this point. No one has convicted Haziel Correa of this. Okay, he may be innocent. Maybe the whole thing is a setup. I tend to believe that it is not. I tend to believe that there is some fire behind that smoke. And, you know, look, Providence, Rhode Island is the only example you need. And if you don't know about Providence, Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island had a mayor named Buddy Cianci. And Buddy Cianci did a lot of great things for the city of Providence. The main thing, Buddy Cianci's single biggest contribution to Providence was when he took office, he was looking for a way to revitalize the downtown. And he realized that Providence had capped a river, that there was a river that ran through the center of downtown. So he had the public works go out and take the cap off the river, put in a river walk on both sides, and immediately created this destination that everyone in town wanted to go to. If you've been around downtown Providence, maybe to Providence Place Mall, you know that there's been all kinds of activity in that part of the city. And they're constantly redeveloping and rebuilding things. And Providence is going through a real renaissance. That goes back to Buddy Cianci. But then Buddy Cianci went to jail. Because as I recall the story, and I think this is it. This is what I remember happening. He caught his wife with another man and beat the man with a fire poker. I think that was Buddy Cianci. And he went to jail. He gets out of jail. He gets elected mayor again. While he's in office this time, he is indicted on corruption charges because apparently there are tow truck companies kicking back to the mayor's office for the privilege of operating in the city of Providence. He is convicted a second time and goes to jail and is not reelected mayor when he gets back out. Now, I actually met Buddy Cianci at one point. And let me tell you something. That guy would scare the hell out of you. Okay? I've met a bunch of Boston mayors. I met Ray Flynn, met Tom Menino, met Marty Walsh. They're not scary dudes. They're guys that clearly get things done. But they're not guys that you look at and you're like, I gotta watch what I say around this guy, or I'm going to have to check under the hood every time I get in my car. Buddy Cianci was that kind of guy. Buddy Cianci was a guy that you were like, you don't want to be on the bad side of this guy. You don't want to be on the wrong side of this guy. Now, I haven't met Correa. I don't know what Correa is like. The problem with Correa is, you know, it's steal small, right? If you're going to steal, you got to steal big. And you've got to involve people who are going to protect you when the feds come calling. Correa is an aspiring corrupt person. A politician, as near as I can tell. Everything is alleged at this point. But when a guy's getting indicted twice in a year, basically for the same thing, basically for misappropriation of money that is supposed to be going someplace else, again, you know, you got to believe that there is some fire to go along with that smoke. I don't know if that's 100% the case, right? I don't know if he's actually guilty of all of this. I know that he's taking a leave of absence because he, well, Might have done a bad thing. Certainly does not have the confidence to continue. But again, what happens if he gets elected? Because he suspended his campaign. He hasn't necessarily taken his name off the ballot. So as far as I know, if you're so inclined, you can still vote for Haziel Korea in the November election. And if he wins re-election, I don't know, does he come back? He certainly seems to like that $119,000 a year. And I mean, listen, you're 27 years old. You know, that's money. That's not cheap. That's a good amount of cash. Sorry, Fall River. I suggest the city council fixes that loophole. Get it right. And don't re-elect Haziel Korea, please. Just don't. It is WMFO Medford. There are talks on Beacon Hill. And talks on Beacon Hill are bad news. When they start talking about things on Beacon Hill, you really want to grab your wallet because that's what they're talking about. How do we open your wallet and extract more money from it? They never talk about things like, how do we make puppies more available to everyone? You know, maybe we need a new state bird. Maybe we need an official state flavor of ice cream. No, when they're talking about things on Beacon Hill, they're talking about ways to get money out of your wallet. And we have a new version of this. This is from WBUR. Mass lawmakers urged to try congestion pricing to ease traffic. Yes, folks, another regressive tax. Citing the Baker administration's warning that traffic is at a tipping point, Baker, by the way, is trying to push through this entire transportation bill. Basically a complete infrastructure overhaul for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which in some cases is very desperately needed. All right. The question is, how do you do it and where do you spend the money? Where do you invest and where are we going with this? Now, I don't know how many of you have been to other parts of the country. And I'm talking about beyond Boston and Providence and New York and New England. Because we have kind of a goofy infrastructure set up around here. You know, where there's one road in and one road out. New York, there's different ways of getting into New York. But New York is an island, so you got to get over one of the bridges. And then all the traffic pours into Manhattan and you get a mess on your hands. But if you've been to other parts of the country, you've been to Washington, D.C., if you've been to Atlanta, if you've been to Chicago, if you've been to Los Angeles, you know that congestion is a fact of life, but that there are generally ways to get around it and ways to deal with it. Up here, we have the combination of outdated roads and terrible weather, which means there are 4 months out of the year when we can't do anything about our infrastructure. Because we're trying to keep the snow from destroying it, and we're trying to keep it running in the wintertime. And the traffic keeps building up, and the congestion keeps building up, and you've got to fix everything in these narrow windows. And so everybody's sitting around saying, what do you do? Boston's solution for the last couple of decades, and other cities are adopting these non-solutions as well, is to figure out ways to get rid of cars, right? That's their plan. Like, we're going to get rid of cars. Like, don't drive. What do you hear every time there's an event in Boston? Anytime you're thinking about going to Boston, oh, leave your car at home. Well, how am I supposed to get to Boston if I leave my car at home? Because I can't get to Boston any other way. Either the MBTA doesn't come to where I live, or the MBTA doesn't come. And this is the first thing that we need to address before anybody even suggests congestion pricing. There are two things that we need to address. But let's see what they have to say here. And then we'll talk about the two things that Massachusetts needs to address before we can even begin talking about congestion pricing. Citing the Baker administration's warning that traffic is at a tipping point, lawmakers and advocates renewed calls Tuesday for Massachusetts to follow its peers I love it. We need to be like the other cities. We need to be like the other towns. They're doing it. Why aren't we doing it? Because it's a bad idea over there, too. Just because somebody else has a bad, unfair idea that penalizes the poor doesn't mean we need to adopt it here in Massachusetts. But this is the way politicians think. Oh, other states are getting away with it, so we should be able to do it too. Lawmakers and advocates renewed calls Tuesday for Massachusetts to follow its peers and adjust roadway tolls at different times of day in an attempt to reduce congestion. A version of the system, referred to as congestion pricing, is already in place in 9 of the country's 10 largest metropolitan areas, according to Transportation for Massachusetts Executive Director Chris Dempsey. When these guys like Chris Dempsey go on these national junkets, right, where they bill the taxpayers for their 5-star hotel rooms and their steak dinners, what they're doing is you have the transportation directors from all 50 states come together and they compare bad ideas. And the worst, it's sort of the opposite of the free market system, where the worst ideas float to the top. The most unfair and punishing ideas float to the top, and the good ideas get ignored. The only city on the list without any form of congestion pricing, he said, is Boston. Oh my God. Which one study deemed as having the worst and costliest traffic in the nation. Whoever wrote that study has never been on the loop in Washington, D.C., and has never been on the 101 in Los Angeles, California. I've been on both of those roads. They've probably never tried to get into or out of New York City on a Friday. I've done all of those things. And let me tell you something. Boston traffic is a walk in the park compared to that, okay? The 101 in California is 20 miles of traffic every single day. Boston isn't even 20 miles wide. People got to sit at some red lights. They're all bent out of shape. Quote, traffic is not unique to Massachusetts, but we have largely been throwing up our hands in frustration or even adopting policies that make things worse, Dempsey said. Other regions around the country are tackling this problem head on by providing pricing incentives for where and when people drive. So this is, I mentioned it last week, right? This is the big thing with politicians. Social engineering via taxation, right? We're going to tax you to change your behavior. Now, I don't have a problem with this if you're taxing the rich to stop them from flying all over the place. There was a set of recommendations that came out in the United Kingdom earlier this week. And some of them are ridiculous. Some of them are not. Who is this? The Committee on Climate Change, which is the UK government's official climate change advisors, called for a ban on frequent flyer reward programs to discourage people from flying. And one of the things that they found is that 15% of the entire population of Great Britain takes 70% of all flights from the country. So 15% of your population is taking 70% of your flights. Right. And everybody's all up ons now about airplanes and climate change. They also this is one of my favorite aspects of this, by the way, because this is complete and utter nonsense. They want to do two things. Number one, get rid of your frequent flyer programs. No more frequent flyer miles. The other thing is they want to tax you if you fly over a certain number of miles every year. So again, social engineering via taxation. They're basically saying, take the train to Paris, don't fly. All right, that's good if I'm going to Paris, right? That's not good if I'm going to Bahrain. That's not good if I'm going to the United States. There's no train that will take me there. I don't have a week to sit on a boat waiting to get to the United States. I need the plane. Here's some other things that they recommended. Increased funding for the procurement of electric vehicles for the UK government and local authorities. Okay, great. On board. Zero emissions. Reopen disused rail lines and bus services. Okay, on board. Public transportation. Fund training in plant-based or vegan cooking so people can eat less meat and dairy when they're out. No, no, No. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Oh, let me remind the environmentalists. Let me remind the vegans that man evolved to be an omnivore. We are made out of DNA. DNA is made out of protein. Our muscles are made out of protein. Our heart requires protein. We need protein and not soy. We need meat, fish, and dairy in our diet. And this latest craze of, oh, we're going to get rid of all this. We're going to replace it with plant-based alternatives. Have you seen the people who eat vegan? Have you seen the pasty, emaciated, can barely walk down the street vegans? All you got to do is go to Cambridge, Boston, some of them are right here in Somerville and Medford. You see these people walking around and you look at them and they're like, that person really does not look healthy. It's because they're eating a vegan diet. It's because they don't eat any meat. The human body has evolved to survive on meat. Can you get by on a vegan diet? Sure. Sure. Okay. Earlier in our history, right? Or you look at a place like China or Vietnam into the middle 20th century when they didn't have access to meat. And they were living on rice. And everybody is thin and pasty and short and dying young. Because they're not eating the food that human beings are meant to eat. They didn't have access to it. Right? People have been getting taller. This is one of the things that statisticians point out and sociologists point out is that we've been getting taller and taller and taller as the years have gone by. Average height keeps going up because we have a better diet today than we did 50 or 60 years ago. So what we're doing is we are reaching the potential of our genetics because we have a diet that will sustain our bodies. And guess what? It is not a vegan diet. With a tremendous amount of work, with the assistance of a nutritionist, you can live a healthy life on a vegan diet. Okay? It is possible. But you have to get a lot of nutritional supplements to do that. You have to compensate for the protein that you are not getting from meat and dairy to be able to do it. And the people who are promoting, oh, let's just get rid of meat, don't consider that for a second. They don't understand. I don't think it's that they don't understand. They don't believe that human beings have evolved to eat meat, even though most people who have studied anthropology, like myself, most doctors, okay, most nutritionists will tell you, yeah, man is a meat eater. We have evolved to eat meat. And if you are involved in a physical line of work, if you are a laborer, you need meat. If you are a professional athlete, you need meat. Go walk into an NFL locker room and look for the vegans. You're not going to find any. Because they wouldn't be able to play. They wouldn't be able to reach the size and the strength that they need eating plants all day long. So we've got to figure out some way of defining a relationship with meat that is not wasteful. Banning it is not the solution. Now, the UK government has said that they're not paying attention to all of this, all right? But in this case, to bring it back to the frequent flyer miles, if you tell the rich that the assumption that is made underlying all of this, and again, 15% of people in Britain are responsible for 70% of air travel. Who are those people? The researchers sit there and they say, well, it's the jet setters. It's the rich. So let's take their frequent flyer miles away. Well, hang on a second. How do we know that? Do we know who the individuals are? Are they government officials? They're flying around a lot. Are we going to tell them they can't fly anymore? Are they in the military? Soldiers fly around a lot. Are they salespeople who are out on the road meeting with their clients? Or is it all just leisure travel? If it's all leisure travel, And they don't go into that detail, obviously. They just paint it as, oh, look, the rich are flying around in their planes again. If it's all leisure travel, then I don't have a problem with this. Take away their frequent flyer miles. Tax the hell out of them. And if you can get the rich to get on a train instead of taking a plane somewhere, like you're going to Paris, don't fly, take the train. Okay, that's a net win. I'm fine with that. That's not what we're talking about here in Boston, however. We're talking about congestion pricing. Several bills before the, this is back to WBUR, several bills before the Transportation Committee would create congestion pricing in Massachusetts. Yay. And by the way, one of these is going to pass. Okay? It's done. Don't raise your hand. Don't complain. Once they start talking about picking your pocket on Beacon Hill, it's done. Two proposals range in specificity and duration. One calls for a pilot program in the Sumner, Callahan, and Ted Williams tunnels, and the other would enact full statewide implementation. I don't know how you do that because there's no tolls on some of the roads going into Boston. Both systems would call for roadway tolls to decrease at least 25% during off-peak times, and the larger scale version would impose a premium cost of at least 25% during peak travel. The bills do not define peak and off-peak periods, and peak traffic periods have been lengthening. Roadways within the Route 128 belt, for example, now see a 14-hour peak period stretching across the day, a study of congestion released in August by the Baker administration. By 6 a.m. on a typical weekday, 1 in 4 miles of road inside Route 128 are either congested, which means travel times are 50% higher than a full speed trip, or highly congested, where cars move at least twice as slow. The afternoon rush in that region starts as early as 3 p.m. and lasts until well after 6 p.m. If you have been anywhere near the Route 128, 93 interchange, you know what goes on up there every day. You got that bottleneck on 128 North. After that, heading into Wakefield, you got that second bottleneck up there around the North Shore Shopping Center, where everybody's just narrowing and narrowing. Nothing moves on 128 North in the afternoon. We know this. The goal of the pricing bills is to incentivize drivers to travel at less crowded times of day, or to encourage greater use of public transit, both of which would reduce the all-too-familiar strain of clogged roadways. Well, okay, now I'm done listening to this. We'll give one activist a quote here. Quote, "Roadway congestion is a threat to our economy, our quality of life, and our climate change goals," said Tom Ryan, Director of Public Policy and Government Affairs for the group A Better City. Tom Ryan, get stuffed. Okay, there's my first piece of advice for you, is to get stuffed. Here's why this won't work. And here's why there are two things we need to do before we should even talk about congestion pricing. Number one is to have an alternative. Okay, if you live in Cambridge or Malden or Somerville or parts of Medford, not all of Medford, parts of Medford, the MBTA is an alternative. You can take the T to get into the city, and you can take the T to get home. If you live in Saugus, good luck. If you live in Danvers, good luck. Yeah, there's a train station nearby. All the parking spaces are gone at 7 in the morning. And the train sometimes runs and sometimes doesn't. This is autumn. They have a condition known as slippery rail caused by leaves on the tracks, so they can't run the trains when there's leaves on the tracks. Kind of a problem that we didn't have when I was a kid. This seems to be a Keolis thing. The trains occasionally run in the wintertime. You know, we know what's gone on with all of that. We do not have infrastructure capable of moving people into and out of the city of Boston, and we do not have the support infrastructure for the stations. So I don't know what your solution is there, Tom Ryan, or any of these other activists who are trying to stop climate change. But you can't tell people who don't have access to public transit to stop using it. And you shouldn't be punishing people for driving to work. I mean, this is what I love. Okay, here's the key sentence in the whole thing. The goal of the pricing bills is to incentivize drivers to travel at less crowded times of day. What's my boss going to say about that? Sorry, can't be here at 9 o'clock anymore because there's a new bill that wants me to travel at a less crowded time of day. So I'm going to start coming to work at 2 in the afternoon. No, no, you're not. Okay. That's where this is nonsense. That's where this is la-la land. Everybody has to be at work, all right? Yet down in New York City, they actually have an interesting approach to this, which is different types of people, depending on their job, get into work at different times of day. Because in New York City, everybody takes the subway, because their subway actually works sometimes, a little bit more often than ours does. So if you are a banker or a stockbroker or something like that, you're in at work at like 8, 8:30 in the morning, right? The people who are accountants and lawyers and all that, they get to work at 9:30. And the people who are general office assistants and, you know, salespeople and all that, they get to work at 10:30. And they stagger the day down. They've all sort of just figured this out. They stagger the day down there so that you don't have everyone crushing onto the subway at the same time of day. Maybe you've seen videos of the Tokyo subway system where they have guys who are either retired or aspiring sumo wrestlers pushing people into the trains, packing the trains as full as they possibly can because public transportation is the only way to get around. Is that working for you? What if you live in a place where there is no public transportation? What if you've got to drive to a parking lot that's full and you get there and there's no parking? Well, now what do? You don't go to work. So that's problem number one. We do not have adequate public transportation in this state. We do in the immediate Boston area, but you get a mile outside of that and you don't have the public transportation infrastructure necessary to support something like this. In particular, the impoverished communities on the North and South Shore really get left out in all of this. Okay? And I don't know how many of those people are driving to work anyway, because once you get into the city, parking will kill you. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, the cause of all the congestion around the city of Boston, is the ride shares. Before Uber and Lyft were clogging up our streets with their unlimited number of drivers, we did not have this congestion problem in the city. If you are old enough, if you've been around here long enough to remember the late 1990s, the early 2000s, going to Boston used to be great. After they opened up the new Central Artery, the Underground Central Artery, and the new Ted Williams Tunnel, you could get through the city of Boston in 5 minutes. You get in and out of the city of Boston like nothing. There was parking. I used to host a comedy show Friday and Saturday nights downtown, the theater district. You get parking, no problem. You could drive in and out of the city, no problem. The only time there was ever traffic is if there was an accident. It was nothing at all like it is now. Why? Because the streets of the city of Boston are choked with rideshare drivers. And nobody up on Beacon Hill wants to talk about this. Nobody on Beacon Hill wants to deal with this. The studies have been done. The studies have been done that find rideshare is contributing massive amounts of congestion in all of our major cities. And again, let me talk about New York City. New York City, back in the day, when they first said we're going to have taxi cabs, did a very smart thing, and every city in the country followed suit. They said, we are going to put a limit on the number of taxi cabs, and we're going to do this by requiring every taxi to have a medallion on it that is issued by the city, and we are going to issue a fixed number of these medallions to prevent the city from being taken over by cabs, because the leaders back then understood if you just throw the floodgates open, the city is going to be at a standstill with cabs everywhere. And that's where the whole medallion system came from. Now that became its own problem, right? Because you wound up with these investors buying up all of the medallions. And you wind up with two or three guys who control all the medallions and basically control the cab operations in the city. And they're treating their workers unfairly. And the cab drivers are basically, you know, lucky to make a few bucks at the end of the day because of how much money they have to pay just to rent time in a cab with a medallion. That's not the way it was meant to work. So rideshare comes along and they're like, hey, gig economy. Hey, work on your own time. Hey. And where is all the business? The business is in the city of Boston during working hours. So every morning, all the Ubers, all the Lyfts, all the rideshare drivers flood into the city and contribute to the traffic. And nothing moves. And you can sit there and you can look around at who is with you in the traffic jam. And they all got the little light up Uber and Lyft things all over their cars. Where is the action on that? Where is Beacon Hill on this? Why is Beacon Hill jumping immediately to, hey, let's have a regressive tax that impacts poor people who are just trying to get to work, instead of saying, hey, we got a study here that says rideshare is adding to our congestion. Maybe we should ban that. Maybe we should get rid of them. Here's what I would challenge. This is what I would like to see the voters do. Okay. This is what I think you need to ask of your elected representatives. What would a 2-week ban on rideshare in the city of Boston do for congestion? We'll support your congestion pricing, but first, and only if, you ban rideshare for 2 weeks. No rideshare may enter the city of Boston. Okay? As soon as you enter the city, if you're caught in the city of Boston, we're taking your car away. We are going to ban rideshare in the city of Boston for 2 weeks, and we're going to see what that does to the congestion. And if you want to do it business days only, fine. 10 business days. All right? Monday through Friday, 2 weeks, we're going to ban rideshare. No rideshare may come into the city of Boston. No rideshare may operate within the city of Boston. No Uber, no Lyft, you're banned. We find you on the street, we're taking your car away. Ban them for 2 weeks and see what happens to the congestion. If the congestion magically disappears, which I'm willing to bet it will, then you know what your problem is. And suddenly you don't need all this infrastructure. Suddenly, you don't need congestion pricing. All you need to do is find a way to limit the number of ride shares in the city of Boston. Because right now, there is none. So all these gig economy types go flooding into the city, clogging up all the streets, so that people can hop in a Lyft and get from one end of a block to another. And we've heard people on Beacon Hill talking about that and saying that's a problem. Why aren't you addressing that problem? Where are the activists, by the way? Why aren't the activists talking about this? Why are they? And I'll tell you why they're not. Because the activists who take part in these things are chosen by the legislatures. Okay, the legislators are like, hey, let's get this group in here and let's get that group in here and hear what they have to say. And the reason the legislators want to hear what those groups have to say is because those groups support congestion pricing. Not because they represent the full breadth of thought on this issue. By the way, third thing you can do, easily, telecommuting. And I've brought it up on this show before, telecommuting. You pass a state law. You pass a state law saying that unless you're a hospital, you know, where people actually have to be there to operate on patients, you know, or you're a school where the teachers have to be there for the students every single day. If you're an executive, if you're a mid-level banker, if you're, you know, whatever, if you run one of those businesses, there are 5 days in the week. On any given day of the week, 20% of your workforce has to be at home. So on any given day of the week, 20% of your workforce isn't coming to the office. They're working from home. And if you don't do that, you get fined. Because there is absolutely no reason in this day and age, when we have Skype, when we have the internet, when everything is done by email and cell phone and virtual signatures on documents flying through the ether, there is no reason for people to be sitting at desks and getting into a massive traffic jam to go and sit at a desk to complete the same tasks they could complete at home. That's another solution. Are we ever going to see these solutions from the city of Boston? Probably not. No, because their solution, tax everything, right? That's what they tax them. Just add in more taxes. We'll put in more taxes and more. We'll tax the people until they stop coming here. The old plan, as you will recall, is we'll get rid of the parking spaces until they stop driving here, right? That worked. And that, by the way, is part of the reason why there was less congestion in Boston in the late 90s and the early 2000s, is because a lot of people came to the conclusion that there was no place to park in Boston. It wasn't true. Absolutely was not true. The number of parking spaces in Boston has not increased since that point in time. But the congestion has. So where are all these cars coming from? Where are they going? They're not parking. They're ride shares. This is what Boston's war on parking failed to account for. You didn't account for the ride shares. They don't need to park. They're just driving around all day, picking people up and dropping them off and creating more congestion. You know, in a lot of cases, you can walk from point A to point B in the city of Boston faster than you can get there in a rideshare, or that you could even get there on public transportation. It's a small city, easy to walk around. But we don't hear a thing about this from Beacon Hill. What we hear is, ooh, congestion pricing. And then they're going to wave climate change at you as a way to say, hey, you know, we're fighting climate change, so you got to pay more money. No, that's not how this works, okay? Tax increases are not going to do anything to stop climate change. Giving up meat is not going to do anything to stop climate change. If you want to stop climate change, number one, we got to do something about the congestion, okay? You got to get rid of the traffic. Ban the ride shares. 20% of your employees have to telecommute every single day unless they are required, unless there is some real need for them to be at work. These are workable solutions, both of them. All it takes is a little adaptation, and we will solve. You will watch the congestion magically disappear from the city of Boston. But then the legislature doesn't get any more tax money. They don't get any more toll money. And they don't like solutions that don't give them more tax money. So now you understand. Why is this organization in here talking? Because they support the tax hike. And we are all about the tax hike. We need to get a different type of leader in. We need actual leadership and not the same old politicians who have been pushing the tax our way out of it approach for the past several decades, because it doesn't work. It didn't work then. It is not working now. And every day that goes by, so we're told, we get closer to the end times. So maybe the end times will wipe out the population and that will solve the tax problem. I don't know. I don't think that's the way I would want to see it done.
No why. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Austin 5-day forecast. What the heck is wrong with these people? Man. This is what I love. You have a website, right? That gives you like good, accurate information, and then all of a sudden they go and change it. They're like, no, we're not going to give you a 5-day weather anymore. We're going to give you a minute by minute weather for today. I don't need that. I need to know what it's going to do in 5 days. Your Boston 5-day forecast tonight. Okay, here we go. We got the thing coming in. There is a nor'easter coming up the coast, and once again, the Cape and the Islands are going to get the brunt of it. But this one is coming closer, so we've been led to believe we're actually going to get hit by it around here. We're talking wind gusts up to 50 to 60 miles an hour, depending on where you are. Sustained winds over 30 miles an hour and lots and lots and lots of rain. So at this time of year, you know what that means. The leaves are still on the trees. That means branches down. That means power outages. That means a general nuisance for the rest of the night. Possibility for extreme flooding on the roads. So if you're out tonight, be aware. Be very careful. The worst of this is going to be blowing in here in the next couple of hours. And it's going to pass out before the morning commute, but it is going to linger into tomorrow. So if you're going out tonight, be very mindful. Right now, before it gets here, if you haven't brought your patio furniture in, this is a good time to do this. Make sure you crank down the umbrella sitting in the center of the picnic table because that thing will just get destroyed in all of this. Bring the plants inside, et cetera, et cetera. Tomorrow, we'll have some showers around. And it will be much cooler. High only about 56 tomorrow. Lows falling back into the mid-40s tomorrow night. Friday, partly sunny skies, dry. High of around 60 degrees. Low once again in the mid-40s Friday night. Saturday, looks like a nice, nice autumn day. Sunny skies, high of about 60 degrees. Crispy, cool lows Saturday night in the upper 40s, or in the lower 40s, excuse me. And then Sunday, more of the same. Partly sunny, high around 60 degrees. Slightly warmer Sunday night, lows in the upper 40s. So it's going to be a gorgeous fall weekend once we get on the other side of this storm that's coming in. It's a nor'easter, so, you know, as I said, if you've got patio furniture outside, bring it in. You don't want that blowing around and blowing through your windows. If you've got the patio umbrella still out, it's a good time to bring it indoors. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary, WMFO Medford, 855-915-9636 is the emergency number. It is October. It is Halloween. And every year at Halloween, we play nothing but Halloween music. So here is another one of my all-time Halloween favorites. Good song to listen to at any time of year, but particularly fun during the month of October. Back after this, WMFO Medford.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." Up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow, and he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss, and then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. When the devil finished, Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, let your dog bite, no child, no." devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been. He played, found a mountain, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, we don't fight no child, no.
I'm Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with some tips on buying meat for economy and value. You can be sure you're getting both if you use the USDA quality grades Prime, Choice, and Good as your guide. When you see USDA Prime stamped on a piece of meat, you'll know you're getting the top quality. Of course, it'll probably be the most expensive. Choice is the grade you'll see in most stores, and it's almost as high in quality. Although Good grade is not as juicy and flavorful as the higher grades, it's somewhat more lean and acceptably tender. It's often a good buy for the thrifty shopper. For more free information on meat quality, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250. That's How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
A ranger station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yep, he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the emergency. I must reach the DJ and make him stop the show number. As I said at the top of the show, I'm going to figure out a way for you guys to interact with me and reach out to me during the show. And I will have that answer for you after the Halloween show. Programming note, Wednesday before Halloween, no politics, no nonsense, just good, spooky, scary fun. I will be here for 4 hours from 5 o'clock until 9 o'clock, spinning great Halloween music for spanning the decades. And we'll have some fun, spooky surprises along the way. There was another shooting of an innocent person, another murder of an innocent person by a police officer. And I'm going to call this a murder. Knowing full well that that upsets some people to say that this is a murder. But as far as I'm concerned, when we fail, we utterly fail to train police properly and send them out into the streets, and innocent people wind up dead, that's murder. That's manslaughter. okay? This isn't an accident. This is a cop that did not know what he was doing. And you've probably heard this story by now. From USA Today, Fort Worth shooting. This is via MSN, by the way, because we know USA Today ad blocks. You can get their content on MSN. I strongly recommend, if you're fed up with people who are blocking your ad blocker, just go to MSN.com, click on their news. The New York Times is there. The Wall Street Journal is there. USA Today is there. They're all there. They're all there, and you can read the content without having to worry about ads taking down.